This week we're continuing in a series called James Straight Talk. And that's taking us through the book of James. And if you're new to the Bible, you're not sure where James is, it's way toward the back of your Bible. Not all the way back, but toward the back. You can use your phone or some other device to look at it that way too. But turn to the book of James. We're still in chapter 1. We'll be in the verses in just a few minutes. James is absolutely a straight talker. That's where I got the title from. He's like that tough coach that you know he cares for you. So he's not going to go pat you on the head and tell you what a good little boy or girl you are. He's going to tell you what you need to do to reach the goal. And that's James. He's a tough coach, and I think that's good. I encourage you to go back before you go to bed tonight, read the first 12 verses of James. We're going to, that'll cover 2 weeks ago, last week, and this week, and see how those fit together. See how God fits all those verses together. Today's message is called The Promised Crown. James is continuing in his teaching about perseverance and about endurance. And he challenges us with something that is opposite of what the world says. And it's opposite the way that many believers see things. In our culture, think about it, in our culture, we think of ourselves as doing well based on money, how much money we have, how many possessions we have, the status we have, or if we're famous or something, that we're doing well, right? And that thinking and attitude bleeds right into the church. We have it. We all have this to some degree. Think about a big church conference, if you've been to those. I've been to several of those. You get to the big church conference and the speakers listed, they're well-known authors, they're well-known preachers, usually of large congregations, because even in the church, we see that as successful. Size. And just once, I'd love to go to one of the big church conferences, and the speaker is a guy in some town you've never heard of, and the church runs about 30 or 40 people. Probably will never happen, because we see success as not that. We see success as other things, like fame and size and all of that. And then think about yourself. Think about us. We acquire nice things. Nice things come our way. Maybe you get a promotion at the job or whatever it is. The business is doing well. And we say this, God has really blessed me. We say that God has blessed us. And that is true. When you receive something, it's from God. And he has blessed you. What you have are blessings from God. But what would you say to a believer? I'm talking about a true believer, a follower of Christ, that does not have much. Maybe they are even very, very poor. Would you say to them, well, you probably wouldn't say it directly, but would you think or say it to a friend, well, God has not blessed them. They believe as much as you do. They're faithful to Jesus, but they're poor. Brothers and sisters, both in this country and all around the world, they have less than you do. Some have far less. Strong believers, I'm talking about true followers of Christ, living in extreme poverty. The country of Haiti has been in the news this week. I've made two trips to Haiti. And one of the statistics out of Haiti, it's the poorest nation in this hemisphere. And get your head around this. 60% of the people that live in Haiti, so well over half, live on less than $2 a day. And that's called extreme poverty by the government standards. $2 a day. I spend that much, you know, stopping to get a soda at Casey's or something. $2 a day, 60% in a country of millions of people. So we need to be careful in measuring our blessings only by what we have. Because would you say the believers in Haiti are he's withholding their blessings? I wouldn't say that. As we get ready to do these verses or look at these verses this morning, I'd like for you to do a mental exercise. You don't have to say anything, just in your own brain. So your point of reference right now is your lifestyle, your income, however you live. Just that's where you are right now. Doesn't matter compared to other people, whatever it is, what exists. All the things you have access to, you own your income. So you're thinking about that. Hopefully you're thinking about that. And God has certainly blessed you with those things. All right, here's the mental exercise. What if most or all of that is gone sometime this week. Something happened. Your income is mostly gone, maybe all gone. Your possessions are gone. This happened to small business owners all around the country last year, all around the world, actually. But something happened, and you had to make a major adjustment in lifestyle. Let's assume your basic needs are met. You've got food and water. You've got shelter. But you might be living in a much more humble place, a smaller place, a place that you never dreamed that you would have to live in. You couldn't afford the things that you enjoy now. You'd have to give up some fun things like vacations and eating out, many, many other things. You might have to sell some possessions. So, got it? Major lifestyle change. All right. If that happened to you, how would you change? Not your lifestyle, not what happened, but how would you as a person change? Especially consider how you might change in your relationship with Jesus. Would you have thoughts going through your mind? God must be punishing me. He must be withholding blessings from me because I must be doing something wrong. Would you continue to pursue Jesus at the same level you do now? Would you still think and feel the same way about God? Now let's go the other way, the more fun way. Let's pretend you came into serious, big-time money to the point where you would not have to look at prices anymore. If you wanted something, you needed something, you just bought it, you didn't care what it cost. Let's say you came into $100 million. I mean, just crazy money. And you just go out and buy what you need, right? Afford just about any luxury. If that happened to you, how would you as a person change? And especially consider how it might change your relationship with Jesus. Would you continue to pursue a relationship with Jesus at the same level you do now? Would you still think and feel the same way about God? Would you feel like God had blessed you more? Would you term it that way in talking to people? Oh, God blessed me with this. I got $100 million. I don't have to worry about money ever again. Be real about this now. You don't have to share with anybody else. How would you change if either of those scenarios happened in your life? Because it does happen to people, both of them. Well, let's see what James says about being blessed. I'm covering four verses this morning. All of them are in chapter 1. I'm using the New International Version, the NIV. And that's what will be on the screens if you want to follow along that way. So let's start with verse 9. Believers in humble circumstances ought to take pride in their high position. The first thing I want you to notice in this verse is James is going to get to rich people in just a minute, but look what James lists first. He lists believers in humble circumstances. And all through this, he's talking to believers, not non-believers. He lists people in humble, or poor people, first. When James wrote this, and this is true now, there were believers all around the known world that had come to Christ. Some of them were very, very poor. Some were crazy rich, and we had some in between, and that's true still. I think it's very interesting that James lists the poor people first, and I don't think it was an accident. And he says, people that are poor, or that they live in humble circumstances can actually take pride in their high position. Isn't that interesting? James says it is a high position from God's point of view, through God's eyes. And that is not how the world thinks. It's not what the world teaches. It's not what our own minds go to first. It's the opposite of that. Pretend you are looking at an organization. Maybe you're going to apply for a job or you just want to know more about some organization and you're going to go to their website. And it's a school. It's a big business, whatever it is. And so you go to the place where it has the personnel, all the people that work for the company, and they're listed there. The first person listed is not the janitor, ever. Now, being a janitor is a good position. It's good work. But that's not who we list first. And we don't pay them the same as the CEO. The CEO is listed first, or whoever's in charge of the organization. That's how we think in our culture. The pride that you can take in being in humble circumstances is not the arrogant kind of pride, look what I did, it's all about me. It's the kind of pride that is rejoicing in Jesus. that understands your place in Jesus and that he's taking care of you. When you don't have a lot, it is very easy, or at least easier, it's easier to understand and realize how much you need God on a daily basis. Many of you know that I was in the corporate world for several years, and when I transitioned out of the corporate world and into my first full-time ministry job in 1994, I took about a 75 to 80% pay cut. And so Diana and I made a major lifestyle change. You know, that much income is going to go away. And by the standards of the government, we were below the poverty line in the United States anyway. We never felt like we were poor. It never occurred to us really that we were poor. And it was a time where we really relied on the Lord every week. You know, we need you, God. And I have many, many great stories about how God provided during those years, and we made such a low income. But I could tell you this, just to kind of jump to the end and make the story short. I can tell you that we never missed a tithe. We never missed a payment on anything. We had no debt going in. We had no debt coming out. And I look back on those years with fondness because we both grew in our trust in Jesus and understood that everything we had came from him. I made a whole bunch more money in the corporate world, a lot more money. But I was richer in many other ways when I started full-time ministry. Now, my bank account didn't say I was rich, but I felt richer. I got to preach the gospel to teenagers. I was a youth pastor. I got to speak into the lives of teenagers when they're forming where they are spiritually and their parents. And sometimes I got to preach to the adults as well. I mean, that was rich. We got to influence people. And Diana, I think, would say the same thing. And during those years, that church just couldn't pay us any more than that. All our needs were met. We never went without, just like God promised. And I took pride in that position. Looking back, it's a good kind of pride, you know, that comes from Jesus, knowing he's taking care of you. And please, do not hear how spiritual I am, because it was God that did this in me. It's God that did it in us in a way that I can tell you the story today. I wasn't always spiritual about all this stuff. I wasn't always philosophical. There were times that it was stressful. But God worked in us both. He's the one who did it. Now, James makes a very surprising statement. Verse 10. But the rich should take pride in their humiliation, since they will pass away like a wildflower. If you find your identity or your purpose in life in the things you own or the status or whatever it is, you have to remember that it's all going to pass away. Now, some cliches are annoying. Some cliches become cliches because they are truthful. And one of the truthful cliches that you've probably heard all your years growing up is you can't take it with you. And that is so true. You can't take anything with you. Nothing, not even your own body, is going to make it out of this world. Now we're going to play another game or another mental exercise. And this time I want to hear you. Make sure you're loud for the guy who can't hear well, all right? So besides your loved ones, your people that you love, and I want you to name your most favorite possession, thing. So it can't be, and don't say Bible. Don't get all spiritual on me, because you can get another Bible easy enough. It's on your phone. What is like something, give me two or three examples of something that's just really important, and it's okay if it's not, you know, Christian or something. A computer? That's your favorite possession?
Oh,
well, your photos are backed up in the cloud, so. Okay, computer, what else?
Pictures.
Pictures? Our pictures are backed up 5 times, so I won't lose my pictures. But I would say that if I didn't have. What?
My wedding ring.
Wedding ring, okay, that's a good one. I didn't think of that one.
Pet.
A pet, okay. I brought my most favorite possession with me. Most valuable thing to me. It means nothing to you. It's this CD. I'm not kidding. and laughing at me. This CD is a CD of a group you never heard of, more than likely, The Lost Dogs. It's a Christian group that was formed 1991-92. And they were formed by four lead singers of very influential Christian rock and Christian alternative bands. And they came together and made like a Christian supergroup. And they have their fans. Believe me, they have their fans. And this is their first album. Came out in 1992. A couple years later, a few years later, I got to go to a show, and I got to see them all, and they signed my CD, all four of them. And about 20-something years ago, one of the members died. So you can't get, you know, you can't take it to him to get it signed anymore. This is important to me. It's okay if you laugh at it. It's important to me. It's nothing to you. It's a piece of plastic to you. But this is my most important possession. A few years ago, it's 2015, we went through a financially tight time. And I used to collect CDs, you know, before streaming and all the other ways we can listen to music now. And so I collected CDs. I had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of CDs, maybe over 1,000, I don't know. And some of them in the Christian world were very sought after because, you know, they usually don't go to a second printing unless they're some big name. And so I was able to sell many of my treasures back then. It wasn't fun, but we needed the money. Not this. This wasn't going to get sold. I'm nervous bringing it here, and I'm not kidding about that. I'm very nervous about it being here. And actually, I'm going to give it to Diana so nobody comes swipes it.
Oh, yeah, they're going to want it.
Yeah, they're going to want it. Well, I'll pretend. And that's, there's a group of people, it's fairly small, group of people that would pay at least $500 for that CD, but that's not for sale, not for $1,000. We have our treasured things. But even my most treasured thing, computer, wedding ring, pets, CD, whatever it is, it's not going to leave this world. It's going to be burned up with everything else. The only thing that makes it out of here is your soul, my soul. And your soul is the essence of who you are. It's not your body, it's your soul. And if you know Jesus, you're going to get a new body, thank God. I'm pretty sure when I get to heaven in the presence of Jesus and I'm looking at this great hunky new body I get, it's not this one, I don't think I'm going to be caring too much about a CD. The music's going to be better in heaven anyway. But whatever you and I value, it's going to be gone. And James says to rich believers, people that have possessions, take pride in your humiliation. You can be proud, the Jesus kind of proud, when you know your riches are temporary. Even if you're a person here that has a lot more than me or a lot more than everybody in here. People that understand this, they know their real worth is in Jesus, and all of it, the bank account and the possessions and everything that you enjoy having is going to be gone, regardless of what the world says. So if you're rich, and really to some degree, all of us that have been fortunate enough to be born in the United States, we're rich compared to most of the world. But if you're rich and God has shown you that nothing you have, nothing in this world provides you any real long-lasting, eternal security, then take Jesus' pride in the fact that you understand that. Take pride that you know that it doesn't really matter. Diana and I have known a guy named Ron for almost 30 years, and Ron is a successful attorney, and he makes a lot of money. And he told me one time, you might have been there when he said this, I don't know. He told me one time that he said, Jerry, God gave me the ability to make a lot of money so that I could give it away. And Ron gave a lot of money away. He was kind of soft in that way. And to the fact that he could have had a lot nicer things than he did, but he gave so much away. And a couple of times he got himself in trouble financially because he gave too much money away. Now, he has nice things. It's not that. But he could have had more. He could have had nicer things if he didn't give it a lot of that away. I believe that Ron understood this verse. I believe he knows all of this is temporary and none of it matters. And it could all be gone in literally 1 second. And most people will say that they know that. that you know it's temporary. You know that, right? We all know that. But many people, including many believers, don't really live like that. We keep acquiring things and more things and chase the promotion. And sometimes it's at the expense of our family because we spend so much time at work chasing this stuff. It's not, don't hear me, it's not wrong to have things. If you have nice things, that's great. I'm glad. James says in this verse, it's still on the screen, that wealth of any level passes like a flower. And all flowers are temporary. He expands on the idea in verse 11. Look at this, talking about flowers, then passing on. For the sun rises with scorching heat and withers the plant. Its blossom falls and its beauty is destroyed. In the same way, the rich will fade away even as they go about their business. I have petunias on my porch. If you want to go by my house, you can see my petunias. There are 6 baskets full of them. 4 are on the porch and 2 over by the garage. And every bloom on my petunia plant lasts maybe a week, maybe less, just a few days. They're very beautiful. They come out, and then they die, and they fall off, or I pick them off when they're dead. And then new ones take their place, and it looks really nice. Last Monday, Diana and I went to Lowe's in the evening, and we bought 2 petunia plants. These are separate than the ones I have at my house, right? I put them in the same place, and this one I watered every day. It's still wet in the soil a little bit. This one, it was in the same place. I didn't water it. And as hopefully you can see, it's dying. Its last decent bloom is about to fall off, not looking real good. And this one is doing well. But there's one of those blooms that's dead. It's going to fall off even the good plant. That's what God says riches are like. It's going to be gone. And even the ones I take care of, come around November, I'm going to get up one morning and look out on my porch, and they're all going to be, wilted down because it frosted, and I'll put the baskets in the thing, but the flowers and the plants will be sent to the yard and run over with the lawnmower. This is a picture of a guy named Kenneth Lay. You may not remember his name, but you probably remember the company he founded. He founded Enron. Remember Enron? You might be a little bit young to remember that. Enron was full of accounting fraud. They defrauded the state of California to the tune of billions with a B. Billions of dollars, and other entities as well, not just the state. And got caught. Accounting fraud, securities fraud, and they fined the company. The company went out of business with this. But Kenneth Lay, they also brought him to trial as a person, brought him to trial individually and charged him with these things, which he was guilty of, and he was found guilty of it. At the beginning of his trial in 2001, Kenneth Lay was worth $420 million. It was his personal net worth, not counting the perks he got, like the free car and all that, at Enron when it was still going. And so he's found guilty, a bunch of charges, and after the trial was over, Kenneth Lay was worth negative $250,000. He owed $250,000, and he had $420 million at one point. And he never went to prison because he was convicted, but before his sentencing hearing, he had a heart attack and died. The man was only 64 years old. Now, some of you, that sounds old. Some of you, that doesn't sound old at all. If you're in your 80s, that sounds like a young whippersnapper, right? 64 years old, all that money, and he didn't have a penny to leave for his family. He left debts. Look at the verse again, verse 11. For the sun rises with scorching heat and withers the plant, its blossom falls and its beauty destroyed. In the same way, the rich will fade away even as they go about their business. So it's not always going to fade away just because it's the end of your life. Faded away at age 64 for this guy. Now James is going to show us what blessings look like. God's idea of blessings. And it's not based on your bank account and what you've acquired and all of the things that you've accomplished in this world. Look at verse 12. Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, Because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. It's a great verse. God doesn't say in this verse, the person with the most stuff is the one I blessed the most. Or the person with the most impressive resume, oh, that one's blessed. He didn't say the one with the most successful career or fame is blessed. Or the person with the most Instagram followers or YouTube hits or anything else, they're the ones that are blessed. God says the one who perseveres under trial, that's the person who is blessed. And trials come our way, whether we're rich or poor. And we know that trials are not easy. Some of you are going through one right now. Trials stink. They're hard. I don't like them. And we all go through them, though. Whether you call it a trial, a tribulation, a test, a hard time, whatever word you want to use, God calls us, commands us to push through them, and he wants to walk with us through them. 2 weeks ago, when we started James, we talked about James telling us that we had to face our trials, that they're coming our way, and we are supposed to bring Jesus into the trial and to trust him. And then last week at the outdoor service, when we have a trial, a hard time, and we don't have wisdom, we're supposed to ask Jesus for wisdom, our first source, and then we're to believe him for an answer. And now James is showing you, when you make it through that trial, so we're talking about on the other side of the trial, when you have stood the test, when you have persevered, look what happens. That person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. Now just let that sink in for a moment, especially if you've come off a tough time recently or going through one right now. It's really hard. That's what's awaiting you on the other side of the trial. A crown of life that Jesus has promised every believer that perseveres. I have no idea if the Bible is talking about a literal crown that you get in heaven. Some people think that, but I think a lot of it comes from songs. My guess is it's probably not a literal crown, but it's okay if you think it is. That's fine. I think it's more of a metaphor for the different rewards we receive in heaven. You need to remember, once you are saved, this is all once you are saved. James is talking to believers. So you need to know Jesus personally. You need to confess him as Lord. Have your sins forgiven. And if you've never done that, you can. There'll be a prayer team up here later. I would be thrilled to talk to you about Jesus. If today's not a good day, let's get together later this week. Give me a call right on the communication tear-off sheet, and we'll get together. But if you don't know Jesus, none of this is applicable. It's not true for you. But once you're in a relationship with Christ, your sins are forgiven, you're right with him, there are rewards of varying degrees in heaven for believers. That's all over the New Testament. Throughout the New Testament, actually, there are five crowns mentioned. This is just one of the five, the crown of life. But our focus is not what the rewards will look like, because we really don't know. There's no telling what it is. The focus is on obedience in this life, allegiance to Jesus Christ, not allegiance to the world. And whether we get five literal crowns in heaven that we lay down later or something, or they represent something else or metaphorical, I think that you're going to like it. No matter what you think it looks like, I think you're going to like it. I think it goes beyond anything we can imagine. You could trust Jesus for this. And when those of us that follow Jesus get to heaven, I think having a new body, being in the presence of Jesus, I mean, face to face, we could see him, having eternal life, that's enough right there. That is enough. I'm in heaven? Jesus? New body? Yeah, that's great. So any rewards that Jesus chooses to give me or you, that's extra. That's icing. That's a little cherry on the top. And I think you're going to like it. But the verse does say, blessed is the one who perseveres under trial because, having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. There are rewards if you're obeying Jesus in this area, like persevering, enduring, and other areas. We need to obey Jesus in all areas. Rewards are awaiting for you in heaven. We're about to sing another song, song of worship. And before we sing it, would you answer these questions, just in your own mind. Are you going through a hard time right now? And if you're not, you can file this away for when you do. Right now, is your faith being tested? Is this being stretched in some way? If you're going through a time like that right now, are you going to purpose yourself to persevere, to keep going, to keep trusting the Lord? Now, we all know, we can say, we can repeat, that Jesus is our living hope. Jesus is alive. He is resurrected from the dead, and he's alive forever. And he is our hope. He's our living hope. Will you live your life that way this week? Will you go to Jesus first when something hard shows up? There's a line in this song. I want you to look for it when we get there. And it says, the cross has spoken. I am forgiven. The King of Kings calls me his own. Now watch for that. It's truth. It's biblical truth. Do you believe that? Will your life reflect it? Will you stick with Jesus through anything? Because if you do, not only will you see him, not only will you be in heaven forever, not only will you get a new body, you will have all those things, and Jesus himself will give you the promised crown. The promised crown of life. Whatever that looks like, we know it's beyond wonderful. So, let's sing this song like we mean it today. Jesus Christ is my living hope.